session number one, double 747, real 47.
You're telling me that you went out from Pozzuoli and you shot with enemy weapons, with German weapons.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And we seem to be trying to dive as deeply as possible into the sort of German psyche, make us feel like Germans and see the war from their point of view.
Did this go as far as discussions or lectures on the National Socialist ideology, or was it simply on the technical and military level?
I think it was technical and military. I'm reflecting what would have been feasible at that time about the Nazi ideology. And we had already been, the whole lot of the Western world had been rightly, in a sense, brainwashed against Nazism and everything it stood for. And we all thought that we knew what they stood for. What was seemed important was to get into the mind of the military. Yeah. I think that would be the flavour of it, rather than the mind of Hitler, which we thought we knew.
When you were using these weapons, do you remember what sort of, was it just basic small arms, or did you have any?
I'm not sure, because it would depend, of course, on having the ammunition as well.
Yes.
The fact that we were doing it on marshes suggests that we needed some space, and it could be, though I don't remember, it could be that we even fired some German mortars to see the sort of thing that had been fired against us.
Do you recollect ever having an opportunity to see any German artillery pieces?
Well, you certainly saw them. Yes, I saw 88 millimetres there, and I think we probably, though this may be stretching my memory and imagination, I think we saw one or two German SP guns. Previously, of course, those we'd seen had all been broken in battle. These could have been captured ones. My memories on this are confused partly because way back a year before, a century before, I had been taken from Octu to see a gunnery museum in Stoke-on-Trent or somewhere near there, which had a vast array of guns of various nationalities. And I get the memories and impressions mixed up between that, where I had seen quite a lot, and of course the Imperial War Museum, where one has seen them since, and this particular episode, which I don't really remember much detail about, in Naples. You're quite right. I mean, what we must have done was to fire one or two German machine guns. I think that's almost certainly the case.
Who was actually doing the instructing on this intelligence course?
Well, yes, I mustn't malign anybody, but on Sunday the 26th, I put that we had an all-morning exercise with Captain Hobbs, who must have been one of the people in charge of this course, who spends his time insulting the decent Americans who are on this course at every turn, and it creates the most unpleasant atmosphere.
So I know no more than that. Presumably,
yes,
or
that's
at least
right.
One officer involved.
Oh, you mean on the directing staff of the
yes,
course?
Yes.
Oh, I think they were probably mostly officers. Mm. Perhaps one or two senior intelligence staff sergeants, this kind of thing. Actually walked along the seafront as at home. Oh, it's all films. I put that I wish we could do something other than going to the cinema, but there seems to be nothing else to do.
Was there no homework then for
well, there was, but I mean, there's a limit to, yeah, you get away as soon as you can, I suppose, from that. I do badly in a conventional science test because I mistook the time available. Another 4 mile Pozzuoli walk with the moon over the Mediterranean Bay.
What would the conventional science be? Would this be science for map marking? Or
yes, that's right. It's exactly. It's like the key. I forget what you call these things which are in front of all the maps and atlases we buy, they're all got survey maps, you know, the conventional signs.
These be German conventional signs or our own, presumably, since you have...
We seem to be looking at the Germans, don't we? Yes. I presume it was said we might be able to make some sense of a German map had we captured one. Though I'm speculating on that. I had a surprise telephone call here from a major at Allied Force Headquarters, who was the brother-in-law of my then-girlfriend at home. He was a gunner officer who was not in action, but he was a solicitor by profession. And he was at Army Headquarters at the Palace of Caserta. However, the course went on. Tuesday the 28th, we were on to enemy tanks and SP gun recognition. We had a test on these things.
Would that be using photographs or actual examples?
I think it must have been photographs as well, I would guess, as possibly captured training manuals with
silhouettes.
Proper silhouettes, that's right. Have an extra period, to my annoyance, so have to hurry. Yes, that's right. Have to hurry and dash in the rain to on an Italian train to the San Carlo Club, getting there at 7:30, and meet Bob Waddingham, the girlfriend's brother-in-law. Good Lord, he remembers her as a little girl of six. That's right. Also at the club, I run into Larry Martin, who was the jovial ex-brigade major of 167 Brigade, who had been very kind to me as a raw young subaltern in the early days at Salerno. He's now a lieutenant colonel and a battalion commander, and is a good deal less carefree. The change in the man was noticeable. He had been all... joviality, and was now deadly serious. He'd no doubt lived a lot in the intervening 6 or 9 months.
Did you notice similar changes in other people who you met, that their character or behaviour was changed by having been on campaign for prolonged periods of time?
I did, but you see, when it's happening within the family, by the family I mean your own mess,
yes,
it happens so gradually that you don't notice it. But to go right off that immediacy, I did notice it a year later quite strongly with some of the students back at university. People I had known as very carefree young men seemed to have forgotten what their life had been like before, and they were now sort of senior citizens of the common room, and carefreeness, or whatever the term is, had passed them by and disappeared. People had been aged by the war quite a lot.
Or matured.
Or matured. Some much more than others. I never knew, because I didn't have time to pursue it with them, whether this was because of the particular kinds of experience they'd been through or because of their built-in temperament, that they were destined to turn this way under the same influences as did not turn other people that way. I don't know. But this was, I remember so clearly, Larry Martin, a splendid man, and he still was a splendid man, but he was no longer jocular.
Could it be that being a colonel is more responsible than being a brigade major?
Well, I think there's something of that, certainly. I mean, he was a number two, in effect, within a brigade headquarters, number two to the brigadier, in situ, but yes, I mean, being in charge of a battalion and really being in charge of people's lives in the literal sense of giving orders which might cause them to be killed is different from the planning operation.
And because really a brigade major is a sort of executive officer who does as he's told.
That's right.
As a colonel actually makes the decisions.
Making decisions, that's right.
So there's a different sort of moral responsibility.
This man was a regular. He's not, I mean, there were a lot of territorials around, but he was one of the regulars. Presumably that had helped him to become a brigade major.
And a colonel,
I'd love to, and a colonel. And I'd like to know, though it's far too late ever to find out, what happened to him subsequently. Because I had a high regard for him. He's a very intelligent and sensitive man. And, of course, being sensitive may have caused the war to affect him more deeply when he got really into action at the battalion level. Next day, San Carlo Club for tea, next door to the San Carlo Opera, Madame Butterfly, enjoyable. Meet there a major who thinks our division is now back in the line. I hadn't been in touch with them now for nearly 2 weeks. Then out in trucks on the Thursday, the 30th of November, out in trucks to watch a mock battle from the, goodness me, watch it from the Cuma Caves of Antiquity, the oracles.
What sort of mock battle was this? Was this a demonstration?
No idea. It must have been a demonstration.
Demonstration of German tactics,
must have been
perhaps?
Infantry, presumably infantry tactics. There wouldn't have been much opportunity for armour. And we also had an OP exercise. It seems to have been a mixed bag by this time.
OP, that would imply that the course was really being run for the artillery as such.
It wasn't.
It wasn't mixed, was it?
It was very mixed. I mean, the other two people from my division were, neither of them were. Well, one of them was a light ACAC.
Yes.
And the other was an infantryman.
Mm.
It's a curious world one developed in over a short period of a year or so in Italy. We were a community. I mean, I had a call. Again, I'd had this call from my girlfriend's brother-in-law. Then the next day I had a call from Colin Rowan, who is now a major with the CIC. What's that? Central Intelligence Corps? I have no idea. CIC. But having one's movements were known, we had our own network of almost a national telephone directory of the British Army in Italy. Whether we literally had one, I don't know, but people who were on the staff obviously had access to where other people were. Sort of thing that was unknown to you at troop level in the gunners. I mean, your only telephone was the battery.
So you were right at the end of the tree, weren't you?
If you were in the troop,
the end of the
yes.
Moses twig, whereas if you were back on the staff, you'd be in the trunk.
That's right, exactly. And at RHQ, where I had been most of the time, it was an intermediate thing. And one would talk only to brigade, or at the very most to division, or down to the troops' batteries. But this was an entirely different network, unknown to us, emanating from the palace, the Kings of Naples palace at Caserta, which was a huge mansion, a tremendous place, still there, no doubt. I mean, really massive. The Kings of Naples were autocrats and tyrants in a big way.
And patrons of the arts.
Oh, yes, 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 that's right. Yes, yes, hence the San Carlo. There we are. Friday the 1st, it's still going on, 1st of December. All day on a grueling divisional organisation exercise. I act as a brigade intelligence officer and have to do the intelligence summaries, etc. Again, another film in the evening. Head buzzing with the intelligence work. It was beginning to sort of take hold. Saturday, the 2nd of December, test from 9 till 11:45. 14 papers in the American style of yes or no.
Tick tests.
That's what you call them, is it?
Yes.
Mm. I forget, I mean, there's some other terminology. I can't remember what it is now, but it's much under fire currently for not calling on people to use English. Yes or no questions, no fluff. Glad it's over. So it was over then. To Naples, buy towels and collar studs. One forgets collar studs these days. And do a few oddments, spend the time in club, nothing to do except eat and drink. Sunday the 3rd December, very lovely day, which has to be sacrificed to military intelligence under the boring Captain Hobbs. Pay out more and more cash for a mess party, for which I have no girl partner and don't want one. Then to Pozzuoli, go into a church and reflect a bit. Try to get my mind in order.
What had disordered your mind?
I don't think anything particularly. It's just the need for isolation. One of the horrors of army life is the number of people around. I mean, it's the fact of never being on your own. I guess that for people who went to boarding schools, this would be quite common form. If you'd been at a prep school from the age of seven, then the army would just be a continuation of this by other means, only the army was probably more comfortable. But those of us who had not been through that regime, I think all of us probably found the lack of time to yourself in the army a bit of a trial. I mean, imagine living all the time with other people, all the time.
No privacy.
No privacy. To get away and just sit, I mean, a church was not because of any excess of religion, certainly on my part. It was a place where you knew that nobody was going to talk to you.
So you could reflect.
You could reflect.
In peace.
That's right. I hear that the 11th Light ACAC Regiment has been broken up. Presumably you didn't need ACAC when the Germans no longer had any planes.
This stage, light anti-aircraft gunners were being converted into infantrymen.
That's right. Well, even before this, because a friend of mine had been crossing the Rhine 3 months before, friends who previously had thought they were in relatively safe ACAC jobs suddenly found themselves in flat-bottom boats at Nijmegen.
An assault river crossing.
Yes.
Is rather dangerous.
Not very funny, no. And that would be when, about July 44, it was some months before this anyway. Perhaps it was August, I don't know. Yet another film. And then 4th of December, it looks as though we're getting to the close now. I came 8th out of 20 officers on the course and 11th out of 42, including the other ranks. So 42 was the total course. 20 officers,
and
22
about 12
ORs.
Other ranks.
Yes. With 73%. Have a boring day on a core exercise which has as its theme, exclamation mark, us at Anzio. They were already we were already part of military history.
Historical.
Yes.
It sounds as though this intelligence course also involved some element of training in staff work, that it wasn't just pure intelligence.
I think that's right.
So you mentioned a divisional exercise and a core exercise.
Yes, that's right. I'm sure that's right. But then the two are fairly close together. I mean, even at my humble level, I had been assistant adjutant and intelligence officer and ADC to the colonel, all three things. And you found some flavour of this at brigade and to an extent in division, that intelligence and staff planning were fairly close.
Well, operations and intelligence obviously must go
very yes.
closely together.
That's right. That's right. We ended up with a party after this core exercise on Anzio, which brought a wry smile to those of us who'd been there. Party, lots to drink and wax. That's the American Air Corps, isn't it? That's the American women and RAF nurses to dance with. Next day, Tuesday, 5th December, finish on a low note with insipid lectures. Arranged to visit Caserta, then to Naples for a bit of shopping. It's lit up and the streets are attractive, but obviously there's not much to buy. Go to an ENSA show, South African ENSA show. Wednesday the 6th, people disperse and I'm collected by the padre of all people, our regimental padre who's been into the south. That's right, in a PU, a 1,500-weight truck, personal utility, which keeps breaking down.
Do you know what the Padre had been doing?
I have no idea. He may have been to a prayer meeting. I just don't know. He was a nice man, very nice man. I remember it particularly because I think I'm right in saying that we had all of our kit stolen out of the back of this truck when we were going through some outskirt of Rome without even stopping. They're very good, the Italian thieves.
Agile, at any rate.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What did you lose?
For the second time, I think I lost my kit. I'd lost it once already in the early days outside the San Carlo Club, even though the truck was backed up right up to a wall. It hadn't stopped them getting in. Anyway, this saga, numerous errands, then go to Caserta and to the vast old palace of the kings of Naples, which is now Allied Forces headquarters, meet Bob Waddingham. That's the brother-in-law of my girlfriend at home. And then Colin Rowan, and see an amateur production of Arsenic and Old Lace in the miniature opera house of the king in the palace.
Is this after you'd been up to Rome? So you'd been off with the Padre up to Rome and then back again?
No, we were on our way to Rome. I jumped ahead a bit. I'm sorry. This was on the way up to Rome. Caserta was not very far from Naples on the road north. Have a drink in General Mark Clark's Fifth Army cozy personal room in his absence. I don't know how this came about. Thursday the 7th, the Padre's truck breaks down again, so we stay at Allied Forces headquarters. This palace is quite breathtaking in its size and decoration. The lucky people working here out of all danger must have a whale of a time. And it was our 56th Division, I'm told, that captured it in the... it's not told, I remember. It's our 56th Division that captured it in the early days following the Volturno crossing. That's right. That would be about October the previous year. It feels really luxurious here. Here, big-scale army gossip from Colin Rowan, who's at... he'd be on the Commander-in-Chief's staff. I put CIC, of course. That's where he would be, a major on the CIC's staff. Talk to Bob Waddingham about home. Return to my bed in a leaking tent in the palace grounds.
So you weren't actually allowed in the building?
No. The permanent staff had collared all the rooms, as you might expect. Off after breakfast with Bob and Colin, the one of them was potentially related, because although I was not engaged to, I was a friend and had been for a couple of years, of his sister-in-law. The other, Colin Rowan, was a colleague from the regiment who had been moved out.
Put on the staff.
Put on the staff, that's right. But they were both in this palace. A wet journey up Route 7, the coastal road, in other words, the Appian Way, going past places of bad memory from the campaign the year before, Damiano, etc., where we'd had some bitter fighting.
Yes.
Arrive Rome, 2:30, usual problem of billeting, but by luck get into the Quirinale, a New Zealand hotel, New Zealand Army hotel. Great place, settle in, again cinema, fanny by gaslight. The Padre is a thoughtful man, and we talk quite a lot in our beds. We're obviously sharing a room.
This was the Anglican Padre.
This was the Anglican Padre, yes, that's right. The second Anglican Padre, we lost one in the Gothic line.
Yes, you were saying you lost a Padre killed by a shell.
Only a few weeks before, that's right. Just a few weeks before.
Did the Padre normally go right forward into frontline areas.
Well, it would be an RHQ
base. That would be his base.
That would be his base, and he would go and visit people in the batteries, and it very much depends on his personality, but make himself available. I mean, he might go to the battery just to try to talk to people, or down to a gun troop, though I don't remember seeing one at the gun troop. They were hugely different people. And I heard of the Catholic padre who'd been in the regiment before I joined it, who sought nothing better than to be going in with a revolver. I mean, he wanted to be part of the action.
Church
and had to be restrained. Yes, that's right. Yes.
Was there a great deal of formal religious observance in the regiment?
No, I wasn't aware of it. It wasn't possible on the whole to hold services. It had happened in Egypt when we were all together in a fixed camp for a while, and it was possible to lay on an outdoor service. And there had been, as I have photos to remind me of it, there had been funeral services. It was that subaltern who died of cholera or something in Egypt, and I've got a photo of the padre conducting funeral service. But no, I don't remember. You see, I was a Catholic, and we, of course, had the whole of the civilian churches at our disposal. So if we went to church parade, it was accepted that Catholics would go into a Catholic church. There were no CUE churches in Italy, certainly not outside Rome anyway, where, of course, there's the Protestant cemetery where Keats is buried.
What do you think thinking about the padre's functions, insofar as you knew about them, was his work primarily concerned with spiritual matters, or was it concerned primarily with welfare?
Oh, I think I would regard welfare as predominant. I mean, it's the chaps whose wives had walked away from them at home, and they got to hear about this, who needed comfort, understandably. It was letters to the families of, in some cases, people who had been killed, though as a subaltern I got involved in this myself, writing letters to parents or wives. My picture of the padres, or a succession of padres, is of people who obviously shed all rank, and a pity of it in a sense is that they were ranked as captains, and therefore there was a built-in barrier potentially between them and the governors, which, to their credit, I mean, they tried to minimise, if not overcome altogether. And yet it's very difficult to overcome the fact that you are a captain.
Did they wear badges of rank?
Well, they did, yes. Yes. At least those I remember did, yes. Or am I right? Am I wrong in that? I suppose it's conceivable that sometimes did and sometimes didn't. If they didn't, they would have been very odd. Given that they didn't wear clerical dress, they wore battle dress like the rest of us, and therefore there had to be some insignia. And what I can't remember is when they wore a dog collar under the battle dress. It's this kind of annoying detail that has totally gone. I simply can't remember. Battle dress, yes, dog collar could have gone in place of the ordinary collar and tie. I don't remember. Sorry.
Anyway, you're on your way back with the
padre. Yes, that's right. Still in Rome, we booked in for another night at this excellent New Zealand hotel. We did some welfare rounds in the morning. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Possibly hospital visiting.
Yes, that could very well have been, actually. Some of our people must have been in hospitals in the south. And met a fellow lieutenant by surprise somewhere along the line. Send off, post off gifts home. Quite a long job. At 5:30 to the exquisite State Opera House.